And we hope a few times that we'll be in session on this bill. Members, we have a number of bills, I believe four in total, for this committee. We are going to address two of them today. We will address another one tonight, as you know, at 6 o'clock. And then we have one other bill to address on Thursday. And if necessary, we'll have that opportunity to clean up anything if we hear some unexpected things today. But it would be my desire to, we could hopefully be able to move these things and get done with our business on this side as quickly as possible.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Apropos conversations that you and I have had, I just don't want that schedule. I applaud it for its efficiency, but to close the door on any other issues that could come before the committee as we move through this session, I just want to make sure the door is still open.
Yeah, and we will have, I know of at least one bill that we will be getting, which will be rather broad, coming from the other side, in terms of some abilities, if things come up, to be able to utilize that. Not to scare anybody on the House side, but some of our things are a bit more limited in relating clauses today. But certainly if, in the course of our hearing today, we have something, that's one reason we gave ourselves a little cushion here.
Well, and so as not to be so oblique that people in the audience are freaking out that there's some secondary agenda here, you and I had discussed the possibility of an informational hearing on an emerging
yes.
traffic problem.
Yes.
And it would not be ripe for a bill for this session, but clearly I think would profit from this kind
right.
of an airing. And with your leadership, perhaps some kind of a task force designated to work on really an emergent problem.
Excellent point, Senator. In fact, one of the things I hope to do with the time that we are here, if we can get our calendar cleared of the legislative issues that have been presented before us, we will use our committee time to address a number of issues such as that. I think we need to talk about the rail issue and talk about a rail policy for the state. This committee has heard a number of things that clearly indicates to me that we need to get a much broader look at what's going on with rail. I think we need to start delving into the work that we have been working on in the interim on transportation funding for the next session and get some updates. And then we also need some reports from the Department of the Transportation Department, Transportation Commission, on some of the duties assigned to them in Senate Bill 566 and see how they are doing on those issues. So hopefully we'll have the committee time to do that, form whatever task force that we think are appropriate, including the presentation that we will have out in your area.
Thank you. That completely addresses my concern.
Okay, let's open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 1079. Oh, we got to do the rules first. Okay, let's not open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1079, but let's introduce the rules for adoption. And I understand they are, you can say the same as our session rules, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Senator Starr.
I move adoption of the committee rules.
Senator Starr has moved adoption of the committee rules for the 2008 special session. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Rules are adopted. Now, I believe, we can move ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1079. And Patrick, if you want to give us an overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 1079 requires the issue of card lock cards to provide the Department of Transportation with fuel tax information and to collect and remit fuel taxes when card lock card holders purchase fuel at a retail facility that has an attended portion equipped with a card lock reader. In your packets, you have dash one amendments as well, and I believe we'll have some people come speak to those.
Okay. Before we do that, Senator Devlin, would you like me to call? I assume you're here for the other bill.
Yes.
Would you like me to call you in your office when we get approached that, or would you? I just recognize you were sitting there.
Actually, I have some meetings that are coming up on other bills fairly shortly in the office. So,
would you like to take an opportunity now to talk?
I can testify okay. now and then come
okay.
back to the bill.
Let's do that. Let's temporarily close the public hearing, Senate Bill 1079, open a public hearing, Senate Bill 1084, and ask Senator Devlin to give us his testimony, and then we'll return to 1079.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Thank you for allowing me to come before you in support of Senate Bill 1084. Please note that your committee administrator has dash one amendments, which I am also supportive of, which you will consider later. SB 1084 came forth at the request of local firefighters and the International Association of Firefighters. This legislation will allow firefighters to continue to do their annual fill-the-boot fundraising on Oregon streets and highways. Without this legislation, firefighters could be cited for improper position of a pedestrian on a highway. Some background information on Fill the Boot fundraiser I think is appropriate at this point. Money collected during the fundraising goes towards the Muscular Dystrophy Association to fight over 40 neuromuscular diseases, MDA summer camps for children, professional and public health education, and other programs. In Oregon, $600,000 was raised in 2007 during the Fill the Boot drives. I think we've provided you with a color handout of that, some of those efforts that really around the entire state. And in a total sense, 1954, it should be noted that the International Association of Firefighters has raised over $300 million for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. One of the things I'd like to say here a little bit off the prepared testimony is, for those of you that spend any time on the Internet, just put in boot and firefighters, and you will find out that this is something that occurs across the nation, I think, and actually Canada, maybe other nations that I'm not aware of. It is actually something that is extremely organized, I think occurs a few days out of the year, something that fulfills a very worthwhile cause, and to be quite honest, has been occurring now for over 50 years. So I think we're basically trying to accommodate this very worthwhile effort. In terms of trying to make this as safe as possible, the Dash 1 amendments carefully lay out the requirements necessary for an organization to qualify to do fundraising in this manner. These requirements include requiring the organization to hold liability insurance of at least $1 million that cover fundraising activities, posting advance warning signs, the pedestrian cannot impede traffic or create a traffic hazard, and the pedestrian must wear high visibility safety apparel. Not to kid, but the only thing we didn't put in here is that they have to have a big red truck. So with the Dash 1 amendments, we worked with a lot of people, both the firefighters, the Attorney General's office over some legal questions, and the Oregon Department of Transportation. And I think the work on this is actually putting something back in place that has been in state law for a long time, was inadvertently taken out of state law a few years ago, and we're just trying to ensure that these activities occur in the future and that they benefit the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And there are many people here today, or at least a number of people here today, that will make a much more eloquent case than I can for the good work that they do and the people that are so impacted.
Thank you, Senator. Is there questions for Senator Devlin?
Just one, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
Is it your intention in any way, shape, or form to preempt local governments and some of the local governments that have established local ordinances on folks alongside this roadside?
It is not my intent, but I think we are actually working. I have just discussed some of the issues with the firefighters, and there is one local government has approached us with some concerns. We've agreed to actually work on those concerns, probably with some things relative to notification. The one thing that you should know is that in most cases this is still occurring. What we're actually doing is trying to prevent this from becoming an issue in the future. Given the nature of the people that are doing this, I don't think that they are actually going to be presenting any hazard to the public, because they normally have to respond to situations in which hazards have been created and people have been injured. But we are actually having that discussion. Due to the short nature of this session, however, I think what we're going to agree to is basically to look at some of those issues, and if we can do something additional in the bill, we will do it in the House. Otherwise, there's not the time in this session to actually get another amendment drafted beyond the Dash 1s.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you, Senator Devlin. We'll let you go about your day. And we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1084, open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1079, and Patrick, I'll go back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I said, Senate Bill 1079 requires the issuer of cardlock cards to provide ODOT with fuel tax information and to collect and remit those taxes when cardlock holders purchase fuel at a retail facility that has an attendant portion of the cardlock reader. You have Dash 1 amendments which address the issue of allowing retail, non-retail, and wholesale dealers to sell gasoline unblended with ethanol for use in motor vehicles designed for off-road use and for tools such as lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and chainsaws.
Okay. I think what we will do is we'll start with Mr. Romaine, who brought the bill on behalf of his organization, to give us the overview of the bill, and their perspective, and then we'll go to other testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Romaine. I'm here representing the Oregon Petroleum Association. The bill is a simple fix. We went to the Department of Transportation and said, how do we legitimately collect the tax from those people who go to retail card lock places where there is a card lock but also a retail station as opposed to an unattended card lock? How do we collect the tax? And right now there's a bit of confusion. Obviously, if you go to an unattended card lock, it's the card issuer who actually collects the tax. This would put the same requirement on an attended card lock facility. The reason you want to do it that way is the person who owns that card lock facility that may have a retail station there also has absolutely no way of knowing whether that person who's buying the gas or diesel is tax exempt at the time of purchase, so you don't know whether you're going to be having to collect the tax or not. This puts the burden where it should be. ODOT drafted it. We said we would put it in, and it should work for everybody. We commend it to you, and that's all it does. Very simple. Thank you. I don't know anything about the amendments that were proposed. I assume they deal with airplanes falling from the sky.
Something like that.
And so if they correct that problem, we'd be fine with that.
So, again, just as a synopsis, we're trying to clarify the law for those that have retail operations along with their card lock and make sure they're all treated equally as we intended.
Yeah, and it helps you with tax collection. You actually should get more money out of this.
No, we like that, don't we?
Okay. Yes.
Questions for Mr. Romaine?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, Dan Clem, who just stepped out, I think. Maureen Bach. Welcome.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Chair members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 1079. My name is Maureen Bach. I'm the fuels tax manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation, and I believe Paul Romaine did a wonderful job of summarizing what this bill does. Essentially, it changes how my unit, which is part of Central Services Division, deals with the collection of fuels tax. Used fuels are fuels that are used other than gasoline, basically. They're specialty fuels. And so this is basically dealing with diesel card locks. This bill creates a statutory definition of card lock as a non-retail facility for the purposes of fuels tax reporting and compliance. It defines a definition that ensures the card lock card issuer is able to provide the department with sufficient information to audit and collect the tax due it. And it determines that the card lock issuer is responsible for collecting and remitting the tax on card lock sales. At this point, we are looking forward to working with the industry should this bill pass. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Bach. Is there questions?
Just really quickly.
Yes, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a great idea because one of the things I love to do is walk in to report to you and you look it up and say, oh, Gary, you owe nothing. I really like that part. So this will make sure that we use a card lock for farm diesel that's going to be going into our farm vehicles. That in fact, that will have the taxes paid on it too.
That will the card lock, Senator George, members of the committee. That is correct. The card lock card issuer will verify the credentials.
Good.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we'll go back to Dan Clem, who has reemerged.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Transportation Committee, my name is Dan Clem. I'm the Director of the Department of Aviation. It gives me good pleasure to testify on in support of Senate Bill 1079, particularly the Dash 1 Amendment. We appreciate your efforts, Senator Metzger and other legislators, in bringing this issue forward to help solve one of the unintended consequences of House Bill 2210 last session, the blending requirement for ethanol in motor vehicle gasoline. We've been working with the Department of Agriculture to develop administrative rules that they have authority to administer to make it clear that the intent of the bill was not to preclude the sale and distribution of regular unblended gasoline for aircraft. There are only a few aircraft that can take gasoline blended with up to 5% ethanol. There, we believe that there are at least 1,007 aircraft out of 9,000 aircraft in the state of Oregon that have the potential, although we don't know the exact number, that have the potential of having the problem of not being able to take fuel with ethanol in it. We look forward to working with this committee and legislative council, making it clear that the Dash 1 amendment should also provide that the ethanol blending requirement is not a requirement for aircraft, and there may be other testimony that adds to that. But again, we appreciate very much your bringing this forward and look forward to motor vehicle gasoline that can be used in aircraft which is not blended with ethanol. Also wanted to indicate, as the under administrative rule, we have the authority to regulate non-retail card lock facilities on airports, public use airports in the state of Oregon, and we also appreciate the conformity that this measure brings to treating both card lock retail and non-retail card lock facilities. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Well, I want to thank Mr. Klemp for coming forward with this important testimony. The airplanes part of House Bill 2270 really was a very serious problem, and we have heard from a number of constituents. I want to commend Mr. Klemm for his leadership in trying to solve the problem as soon as it became clear that it was going to be an issue for airplanes, and to say on the record that this wasn't something that the Oregon Department of Aviation missed. We all missed it. There are a number of pilots that serve in this body, including a couple sitting at this dais, and we missed it. And I know that the department got going right away to try to find some solutions, and I would very much hope that the chair could accommodate including aircraft in the Dash 1s and begin to address that aspect of the unintended consequences of 2270.
Yeah, thank you, Senator. I wonder if the... if the amendment, because it was intended to do that, if the phrase motor vehicle, you know, is encompassing enough to cover aircraft, that's that was the intent. But we may have to have a different interpretation of that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the rulemaking involving House Bill 2210, it was clear that the term used in House Bill 2210, motor vehicle, did not include aircraft. So the Dash 1 amendment still doesn't make it clear that aircraft, gas used in aircraft, is exempt from the blending requirement.
Okay. Well, I would think, Senator, that with one word we could add that to this amendment, judging by the short session rather than wait. I think, because that was the intent. I mean, I take it in line 13 where it says motor vehicles are designed for off-road use, comma, aircraft, or, and then do that, would cover that.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you. The one other question that I have is that we have heard not the overwhelming symphony of protestation from the aircraft people, but we have heard little meowing protests from those folks that own classic cars. And I know that those may not always be designed for off-road use, but for some people that have investments equal to the financial investment in an airplane, in an older, classic, concourse d'excellence kind of car, I don't know whether or not you would want to try to make this amendment elastic enough to take any of them in.
Yeah. My concern with that, Senator Johnson, being someone who has those cars, I think that is something I think would be best worked on for 09. I would be worried about some of these other more things that are more critical, like planes falling out of the sky, than expanding the on-road use and trying to define what that is. I just think that these other issues that are important with this, I would, even though I have one of those cars, I would rather wait to make sure that I think we may get much more opposition without time to solve it. Although I think that's a legitimate issue, but I think we have some safety issues here. And I don't want those, and as well as revenue issues that we want to have clarified, be my gut feeling.
I would agree with your strategic logic on that, but I just wanted to raise it.
Yes, that's a good point. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, are you going to entertain a conceptual amendment then?
I am willing to do that, unless someone comes in. Yeah, but when we have a work session, yeah. Okay, any other questions for, yes, Senator George?
Just really quickly to clarify for the record, when the bill got to the Revenue Committee, we said, you know, we're really concerned about what's in this thing. And Senator Starr was there with me, and we had a lot of concern. And basically we were told we don't have time to do that. What I'm saying, I'd already given this speech once in the building during the interim, and that is let's make sure that we do what we need to do, even if we have to go a few days over this 30 days we've allocated ourselves. Because it was pretty embarrassing to have Shell and Standard say, I'm not delivering Avgas to Oregon, you know, under these circumstances. So we need to make sure that if we need to, more than one word, that we get it in there. That's my sermon. Thanks.
Just at the risk of beating this to death, I think it also in a public forum is good to acknowledge the aviation fuel dispenser at Lebanon, who stepped up and took this on as a problem and was willing to do whatever it took to fix it for the aviation community. And I just want to publicly acknowledge a good-hearted Oregonian who saw a problem and said, I can help be part of the solution.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Kendall.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, my name is Mark Kendall. I am a senior policy analyst for the Oregon Department of Energy in the Renewable Resource section. And I wanted to reiterate support for previous testimony by the Department of Transportation. We, too, have acknowledged legitimate concerns on behalf of the aviation community that uses motor fuel gasoline for aircraft. In addition, we have received a number of concerns from the classic car owners in the state of Oregon, as well as concerns regarding marine applications where fiberglass fuel storage tanks are included. And those addressing the safety considerations is essential. And I believe that during many of the deliberations early on, the kind of interpretation that was commonly understood was that motor fuel or motor vehicle fuel was for automobiles, for roadway vehicles and engines. Oregonians have used ethanol for nearly two decades in their fuel. More so recently, approximately 5% of the total volume of metered gasoline sales in Oregon is currently ethanol. In many areas, ethanol has been a regular component of gasoline distributed by Shell, BP, and others, and ARCO. So many vehicles, many lawnmowers, many different types of engines have experienced ethanol with little or no complication. But I believe that in the case of aviation, these marine tanks, classic vehicles that have parts and components that are not conducive to changing the chemistry of their fuel with an ethanol product is worthy of your consideration.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kendall. And I think that it is clear with your testimony and other comments that there's more work to be done, and in the interim going into 09, which is another advantage of having this session today, so we can at least take care of some immediate issues, raise the other ones, and have them prepared for hopefully mutual agreement by 10 months from now when we come back. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, if we have any question as to whether or not we should exclude lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and chainsaws, I'll bring you a pile of them that are at my farm with motors that are gone because of alcohol and the gasoline. And you know what the answer to that is. It cuts away the oil that you've mixed in there in order to keep that thing lubricated. And some very, very nice equipment that no longer runs, nor can you afford to have it fixed.
Yeah. Yet newer equipment is now being manufactured with the right components, you know, but you're absolutely correct. There has been more than anecdotal evidence that older household engines, small engines, have had complexity. I should also note, though, that This last week, it was announced by the U.S. Department of Energy that Pacific Ethanol, a producer of ethanol in Oregon, was the recipient of a substantial grant to develop a cellulosic ethanol capacity at their facility, which is one of the long-range objectives and intentions of this kind of legislation. And we're looking forward to having a very high-efficient ethanol production capacity using domestic the agriculture byproduct feedstocks instead of food stocks. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it is an evolving technology, and we'll try to at least legislatively keep up with the evolution of that. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Kendall. What's this here? You're adding something to my list as I'm standing here? Okay. I have no one else signed up, but does anybody from the Department of Ag want to comment? I guess that's my note here. They might, they may not. If you want to, hey, that's why we're here. Come be part of the party. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture, and with me is Russ Wyckoff, our Administrator of our Weights and Measures Division, who has had the opportunity to work at implementing the Renewable Fuel Standard. We thank you for looking at some of the challenges that have come up as we've worked through this implementation and attempting to address some of the public concerns that have been brought forward. We know that many of you have heard from Oregonians, as we have, with concerns about their aircraft and other implements that they may use. The one issue that we have talked about within the agency is, although an exemption allows the fuel to be sold, there are actually technical issues in terms of how motor fuel is sold at the pumps, and the majority of the pumps in Oregon do blending right there out of several tanks. And so the concern about longer-term infrastructure and actually having the fuel available to people is just one issue that we would mention to you in this process for consideration.
Yeah, well that's true, and I think that's clear, is that I think the first step that we can do is to provide the permissive act. We can control the market. The market at least will have the ability to decide how that would work. We can't mandate people carry things, but at least make it available for those who utilize that fuel to see if they can aggregate sufficient buying power to provide it available somewhere. So, yes, we understand. Thank you. Anything you want to add there?
Chair Metzger, the committee, again, Russ Wyckoff with the Measurement Standards Division. The only thing I would add, I would echo Mark Kendall's comments and also Senator Johnson's comments. The largest number of constituent calls that I've had have to do with aviation, classic autos, and marine vehicles, and their concern over where the ethanol would cause a problem for them.
Right. Thank you, sir. Any questions? Senator George.
Do you guys think that we should add something to broaden this to the point that if, in fact, the agency, department, encounters additional problems, that they, by rule, would be able to address those until we could get back in 09? Did you guys look at that idea? Anybody have any comment on that?
Presently, we've tried to stick strictly to the statute and implement it as written. We don't feel we have the authority to change that statute.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments? Okay. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, let's close the public hearing. We'll open a work session on 1079, and Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, should I move? Let's move the amendment, and then we'll amend the amendment. And then amend the amendment.
Yeah.
Okay, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 1079.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 1079. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objections to putting that in the bill? Okay, not so ordered. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move that we conceptually amend the -1 amendments. And what I had written here is to add the word aircraft on line 13 after the semicolon.
Page 2.
Yeah, on page 2. Exactly. Page 2, line 13 after the semicolon, add aircraft and another semicolon or.
Yes.
Appropriate?
Yes. So reiterating Senator Starr's amendment, we would simply add the word aircraft after the semicolon, after the word use, put another semicolon in, and the rest of the line would read as is. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, to be correct, wouldn't you want to, since you've got A and B, wouldn't you want to put A and then B aircraft and then change the B to C?
That's probably right. Yeah.
I knew we had a former teacher here.
That's probably correct.
Go with the English.
Let's.
I just taught history.
I agree with Senator Monroe, who was corrected. You know the English use. So, Senator Starr, could we change that then to after the end of line 13 to have a separate line B. Well, actually, maybe it'd be better to make it at the end so we don't have to change too much. Why don't we just make a C?
We're going
to
make a C.
Just make a C, a line 16, where maybe after line 15, where it says chainsaws, period, put the or in there, and then new line 16, aircraft, period. Would that be the simplest way to do that?
That'll work.
Works for me.
Does that fit your... sentence construction, Senator Monroe?
You're deleting the or then at the end of line 13, correct?
That's right.
And reestablishing it down after saws and then C aircraft.
Yes.
I concur.
Or C and then C aircraft. So is that clear to everyone? Line 13 would read, A, motor vehicles that are designed for off-road use, semicolon. Line 14, B, tools including but not limited to lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and chainsaws, period.
Or,
the word or will be put in, and then line 16 will say C, aircraft, period. Okay. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understood your concerns about not getting into the issue of classic cars, but we did talk about the marine issue, and you were talking about safety, and I don't know how wide open that is if you also included the folks of the Marine, because you do have a safety issue there, and I don't know how far that opens up the door as far as controversy, but the question is, could we put something in there for those folks dealing with this potential safety issue there?
This is what I would suggest, Senator George, because of our time frame, we don't have anybody here to testify with that, and if we did something and then we had to get more information on it, what I would do is, kind of the word's out there now on the Marine, as this bill moves, if that is an issue and people can work on it, and by the time it gets to the House, actually put it in where it doesn't goof up the rest of the bill, you know, there's going to be about 10 days from this day for them to do that and to actually work on it and keep us abreast if that's something they want to do, rather than, you know, try to create something we haven't had discussion on and what that would define. I'm not opposed to that at all, but I think the word's out now. If that's an issue you want to work on, I would suggest working with Department of Ag and Aviation and Mr. Romaine if there was a way to make that clear and concise, and I would certainly not object then to coming back for a concurrence vote on that. Is that understood? Yes, Senator Monroe.
So, Mr. Chair, and you have regular conversations with the House Chair, Representative Beyer, and you'd inform her of what that the intent of our action was.
Yeah, because I think one thing...
And that we would bless her moving forward on those other...
Yes, they can reach agreement on that, that's fine. I think what's really important for us to do is that people work real hard on the card lock bill, we got some aviation things, and we don't want to put that at risk while we continue to work on maybe an additional amendment. Okay, so we have the conceptual amendment. Any discussion? Any objection? So word. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1039 as amended by the -1 amendments. With a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1079 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Senator Johnson, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Got some components in there that you have some particular expertise on.
I
could actually flip a coin between you and Gary. But
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's what I meant.
But next time, you know, we'll do it that way. Okay, let's open up a public hearing.
Like, all joking aside, in the interest of an abundance of caution, I would like to be recorded as stating I have a conflict. I own an airplane that burns avgas, and
okay.
Want to make sure that's on the record.
All right, so noted.
What a world we live in. Okay, let's open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1084, and we'll...
What's your heart?
We actually kind of had a little overview by Senator Devlin, so I don't think we need to do that again. Let's go to Bob Livingston, Kevin Gray, and Gavin. There's a panel, it looks like we have.
Chair, I know that at this position, Councilor Clem would like to speak on this. Would it be okay if he put his 2 cents on this, and then I'll...
Sure, 3 cents, 4 cents, sure. We'll do that. Do you know what he's going to say, though?
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome again.
Senate Transportation Committee, my name is Dan Clem. Now that I'm on break, I am a city councilor for the City of Salem. Representing West Salem, brought forward a motion to the full city council to try to address traffic safety and the issue of panhandling in the street. And also, throughout the last number of years, have been a volunteer with the firefighters in the Field of Boot campaign. I want to clarify a couple of issues. I think the local governments are looking for a way to make sure that traffic safety and that the issues involving panhandling and the drug trade are addressed up front. But when they run into the issue of as noble as the Field of Boot issue, it becomes problematic for us. We deliberately have been holding off addressing the issue when we got wind that Senator Devlin and this committee would be addressing it, and we're hoping that you take action and authorize the Fill the Boot campaign and override essentially local government ordinances so that we can get about the business of addressing some of the other problems inherent with folks standing in traffic. I've been a part of these campaigns before. These are public safety personnel that are in and around the traffic. They know how to handle themselves. They have the safety equipment. They have the knowledge. They also have the big red trucks. They can get people's attention. I don't think one iota of public safety is going to be compromised by making this a well-regulated and legal manner of raising money for very charitable concerns. So I will tell you that I don't speak for the Salem City Council, but as the councilor brought the motion forward, we're waiting for you to fix it so that we can get to some of the other problems. And again, can't say enough good about what the firefighters do, particularly the Fill the Boot campaign. So highly support and endorse your actions to move this forward. Any questions I might be able to answer, I'm happy to.
Well, I have one. Salem is a very big city. And I see in 2007 they raised $8,880, which is nice. However, Hood River, which I happen to represent, which is significantly smaller than Salem, raised almost 80% more. And I would hope that this legislation would spur the City of Salem firefighters to better represent, you know, their members. But we'll have some other comments coming out. Okay.
Yeah, but Mr. Chair, we all pale in comparison to Anchorage.
That's true. Yeah. And what else do they have to do up there? Senator George.
Well, I'm concerned now. Yesterday there was not adequate enough disabled parking around here, so I ended up parking at a meter, and I put $7 worth of quarters in my meter, only to walk back out and find I had a $15 ticket. Could I solicit money to pay that ticket to the City of Salem out here?
If you have a big red truck.
I'll bring him for a big red truck.
I'd love to comment, but I'm not going to.
Wise man.
Actually, Senator George, there is some issues behind your comment that
as
my
I'm
own
told.
Experience on this particular issue. Any other questions for Councilor Clem? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, Bob, are you ready? Bob, Kevin, and Gavin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Livingston with the Oregon State Firefighters Council, and if it pleases the chair and with your permission, I'm just going to highlight really quick and then turn it over to some of these folks for a self-introduction. While I'm here testifying on behalf, and I'll caveat this as similar as Mr. Clem did, while I'm here representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council, I am a Salem firefighter. My comments are representing the state firefighters, does not represent the City of Salem. In defense of Councilor Clem, though, with respect to that, it is one of the very reasons why we need your help. The fact of the matter is that, as Senator Devlin noted, because of a glitch in the statutory requirements, the Fill the Boot campaign last year we were not able to do some of the things that we've done previously in the past, and so clearly there has been an impact on our ability to partner with a 53-year partnership with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And so, in defense of Councillor Clem, I think that's worth putting on the record. Specifically, I would just like to highlight a few things about what this bill does do. One of the things that I think clearly, I think we all recognize that the economy is a little bit touchy here in Oregon and throughout the United States. I think it's important to remember that not only is this bill going to be one of those things where it's a great example of where labor organizations as well as corporations partner with charitable organizations like the Muscular Dystrophy Association to help fill the void on services that, you know, bottom line government can't be able to afford to do that. I'd point out to you that just in 2007 alone, over $1 million were put into local economies through this endeavor, whether it's through the Shriners Hospital and OHSU at Portland, Sacred Heart Hospital in Eugene, Providence Hospital in Medford, and then the MDA summer camps and all the logistics and expenses that go into that. There's one in Portland. There's one in Central Oregon. That this I would argue, is an economic stimulus package as well by us being able to do that and fill that void that state and local governments can't do that. So I think this is an important piece of legislation. I think you'll hear from some families that are directly impacted by this that we simply want to be able to continue our partnership with a great success in Fill the Boot, help Jerry's kids out. And with that, I just wanted to put on the record that I have been approached by Mr. Shaw, who represents the League of Oregon Cities, as well as Mr. Popsdorf, who represents the City of Gresham's. They have some concerns with notification requirements. We're certainly going to work with those groups, try to come to an agreement with respect to the notification of that. We believe we can find consensus. We would prefer to do that over in the House. The one thing that I will, and I've told the gentleman this, we certainly would not be supportive. We do not think it's in the best interest, and I think Councillor Clem emphasized this as well. We don't think it's in the best interest of this successful program to have 250, 280 different models out there and requirements. We certainly will work with them on a notification piece, but we think it becomes problematic and takes away if we have to now work with every local jurisdiction. Having said that, I'm happy to work with the gentleman on that. And one final thing, once again, want to thank Ken Armstrong, who represents the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, as well as the fire chiefs around Oregon. They're supportive of this effort, and certainly without their help on this and some of the things that we're able to do, our program wouldn't be as successful. So I want to thank the fire chiefs for that. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to step back, let Mr. Gray come take my spot and turn it over to these folks, if we could.
Thank you. Let me see if there's some questions for you, Mr. Livingston, first. Is there any questions for Mr. Livingston?
I don't know whether I heard Mr. Livingston say that with this passage of this bill that they could double Salem's amount. I just want to make sure that I understood that correctly on the record.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we can certainly work on that.
The marker has been set. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Kevin Gray, for the record. President of Springfield Firefighters, and also the liaison between Oregon State Firefighters and the Muscular Dystrophy Association. I don't have a long speech. I'd just like to say our work is something that I see not only at Fill the Boot, but when it comes down to the families, when it comes down to the kids at camp. Without our efforts and without our support, many of those things would be cut throughout the state. And to see the kids, you know, Mason's at my camp. I see him every year. It makes a big difference in their life. It makes a big difference in the families and everybody within the MDA. The firefighters are always a giving group of individuals, and we want to continue on doing what we can do and what we have done in the past throughout the nation over 50 years. So with that, I have MDA staff, Gavin Johnson, director out of Portland, and then also family, Rebecca and Mason Carter.
Welcome.
Thank you. Any questions, if you have, feel free.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Gavin Johnson, regional director for the Muscular Dystrophy Association in Portland, out of Portland, and Chair Metzger and senators, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm always honored and humbled by the fact when so many people come to rally around a cause, and people put so much time and work into presenting things like this for protecting something very, very special. I think for the longevity and the frequency of this activity throughout the nation kind of speaks for itself and the importance of it. And the longevity alone creates an a situation where we've almost become reliant on the funds raised to sustain these programs and services that we provide. And we have an amazing amount of firefighters that are committed to that, and it's due to their connection with the families. So I would like to thank you for hearing this and show my appreciation for the gentlemen and the women and part of the firefighters who really are committed to this and willing to go to these lengths to protect it. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome, you guys.
Let's get this over. I'm Rebecca Carter, and this is my son, Mason. We've gone to a couple Field of Boots. First one we ever went to was Albany Firefighters. We had it downtown. Amazing. The firefighters are amazing what they do. They like to see Mason. We went to the one. Lebanon actually had the very first one in a long time. We had it this summer. We did it Jamboree weekend, which was a great weekend. We got all those big motorhomes. We actually got to wave a couple of the stars. They honked and waved at us as they drove by their big motor coaches.
Did they fill the boot?
They didn't fill the boot, though. No. We tried to get them to
Waving's
stop,
good, but yeah. Filling the boot's better.
Yeah, filling the boot's better. I did get the opportunity this year. I was invited by Kevin and the MDA Foundation to actually go to boot camp, which is all the firefighters, Alaska firefighters were there. All of them from all over Oregon and Idaho, they were there, and we actually got to talk, and they got to meet Mason, got them real excited about the Field of Boot, and I think this is real important, and there is a lot of people that do get very upset about the traffic, but as long as they see signs further down the road that they know that that's what the firefighters are doing, I think it's a great thing. We went to Estes Park, Colorado this summer during Labor Day weekend. Memorial Day weekend, excuse me. And they were actually doing their Field of Boot, and we actually donated money. And they had lots of signs beforehand, and that's what the guys do here in Oregon. They put lots of signs. Lebanon put their big fire truck out, and they had their big ladder truck up with the sign. And I think it's very positive, and it's very positive for the kids. They get to go to camp. Firefighters come up to camp. And it's just, it's a great opportunity, and I just think it needs to continue. And they're very safe. They wear their big, bright red shirts. We have a few of them. My husband has one that says MDA, Field of Boot, on the back that he wears every now and then. But it's great for the kids, and I think it's really positive, and I just really thank you for looking at the bill.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming. Questions for any of our guests? Well, thank you. Mason, thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Andrea Meyer.
You can go now.
Yeah, you can go now. You can go now.
We'd love to.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. Excuse my cold flu bug, but I promise I'm not contagious anymore. I am here in opposition to this bill. It doesn't give me any particular satisfaction, but it is the role we play here to alert you that this bill is facially invalid under Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution. As you recall, it says no law shall be passed restraining the free expression of opinion or restricting the right to speak, write, or print freely on any subject whatever. And the Oregon Supreme Court has made it clear that all speech is entitled to the same level of protection, whether it's political, employment, commercial, any type of speech. And it is well established that solicitation speech is protected. There are, of course, historical exceptions to our free speech provision, things like perjury and solicitation and verbal assistance in crime. But the courts have overturned in Oregon laws that prohibit the use of automatic dialing for commercial speech. I'm sure you all recall laws prohibiting door-to-door solicitation and laws prohibiting soliciting contributions from persons and vehicles, Springfield versus Aquazap, which is the case that led to removal of this statute. This is selecting out only certain people to be able to solicit. Unfortunately, it is only, and it is pedestrians who are a member of a group, and they are soliciting contributions on behalf of that group, and that group is engaged in a fundraising drive for the benefit of that organization. That is limiting it inappropriately to content-based restriction. In addition, it gives unbridled discretion to the agency to determine which groups satisfy this, and we cannot do that. Finally, it's a prior restraint on speech, and putting in large liability requirements and lessors and exception for those is also problematic. So unfortunately, I need to urge you not to go forward with this. Picking out and selecting which group or which folks and which speech is going to get the protection, it's going to run afoul of the Oregon Constitution. Happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Ms. Meyer. I mean, I certainly understand. I mean, having dealt with this issue, I know Senator Starr and I worked on it. And in fact, I think the Roseburg approach to the panhandling issue is very similar to the one that we received the Legislative Council on, and that they thought could be defended because it was based on safety as opposed to so this whole issue of speech versus other issues and the much read on this issue topic about selecting things, I appreciate exactly what you're saying. It's a conundrum in trying to do good things and also knowing the history of certain important decisions on this. Questions for Ms. Meyer? Senator Johnson.
I'm not quite sure that I understand your objection. If any group comes forward and they meet the liability requirement and they posted the signs in advance and the pedestrian doesn't impede the traffic and the pedestrian wears high visibility safety apparel, how does that segregate out of class?
It segregates out of Senator Metzger, Senator Johnson. It does by, you're talking, it requires it to be a fundraising drive. So if I want to go ask for money for a bus fare home, under this I'm not allowed to go stand there. But if you're going there for an organization that's raising fundraising drive, you're allowed to go stand there. And you can't set up differences to who can go stand somewhere and engage in speech. So it's all those restrictions. If you said pedestrians can go stand there, you know, as long as it's safety, and they wear a bib, and it otherwise does not produce such hurdles, which a $1 million liability protection does. It's a significant hurdle. Then it's okay, but you're restricting it out. I mean, Portland has permitting processes for engaging in speech activities, and they don't have the insurance liabilities for the sidewalk and the streets and a lot of them.
We're not restricting it out, though. We're simply saying, come possessed of this liability policy.
Senator,
you're, I think, projecting onto it that the cost and the difficulty of procuring such a policy would be constructive prohibition, but who's to say?
Well, Senator Metzger, Senator Johnson, don't just take it from me. And, of course, I can assure you that I vetted this through many of the First Amendment and free speech attorneys in the state of Oregon on this bill when I saw it yesterday afternoon. So my testimony is not simply my opinion alone legally. And I believe there's case law on million-dollar liabilities and other restrictions that appear neutral on their face, but create such a barrier to many people accessing it that it becomes a restriction. And again, carving out an exemption to an offense with being in improper position or proceeding along a highway. So you're carving out a specific exception to a violation of the law for certain individuals engaged in certain types of fundraising. And what if they're not there to raise funds? They're there to gather a petition signature. They're there to ask for bus fare home. They're there to, you know, join the ACLU. But we don't, they're there to vote for me. All those reasons. You can't distinguish and say you can be there, but you can't. And that's what all the language about being a member of a group, how do you satisfy that? How does the agency determine if you're a member of a group? It is, again, the Department of Transportation shall issue a permit once they've determined that. You don't leave it to the agency to determine who's a group. Are you actually soliciting contributions on behalf of that group as part of a fundraising drive?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, how is this different than me getting a parade permit to march through downtown Portland on fill in the issue?
Sure. Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, if you want a parade permit to march down the let me first back up and say, so if you wanted to just gather on the sidewalk in Portland, you actually don't need a permit unless you're going to block the whole area. And when you do the street, what you're doing is you're taking over the street for not the use it's intended for. You're getting authorization from the city to sort of break the law because the roads are for cars. And so when you get that permit, you're allowing it to be used. And they cannot charge an exorbitant amount. They must allow it for everyone. They can't say, you know, we don't like what you're doing. You're doing a parade for an organization that we find reprehensible, so you can't do it. This isn't the same as that. This sets up a criteria of who qualifies already based on the content and who they are and what and the purpose to which they're asking for the solicitations or that they're engaged in speech. Does that... I know that doesn't... I hope that answers your question. I take no pleasure here, and, you know, I just would urge you, the reason in 05 that... And let me explain the history. So the court back in 1996 in ACWASAP held that the earlier ordinance, state law, was unconstitutional. And if you read the Court of Appeals opinion, you won't read much of an opinion. It just says the state concedes it's unconstitutional under Article 1, Section 8, and it's done. And then what happened, I gather, is that in 99, and we didn't catch this, they came back and added the fire safety provision to that statute, but that statute had been held unconstitutional. And then in 2005, because there had been cases, and I'll get back to that in a minute, you repealed that section. And the reason you did is because having an unconstitutional statute on the books where law enforcement was using it against folks, where it had been clearly stated as unconstitutional, subjected the local government to attorney fees provisions when they illegally enforced that statute against folks. So that's why you came back in 05 and removed that law. And I'd urge you not to go down this path here, because I think it would not withstand.
Senator Stark.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. First,
excuse me.
Under current statute, firefighters all across Oregon are filling the boot. Is there any problem with what they're doing today under current statute?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, I don't know the details of where they do it. Again, a lot of folks can gather and stand and ask for money. They can either get a permit again if they're taking over the whole area. Everyone has access to it. So I'm assuming that if they're engaging in it, just like where everyone else can do the same thing, there's no problem.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. I guess the problem that you see with this bill, and let's look at the original bill, not the amendment, is basically Section 3. Is that correct?
Correct, Section 3, yes, the new language.
And I guess Sub 3 of subsection of maybe where you have to get a permit.
Yeah, Section 1 Sub B is Section 1. Well, let's just turn the bill and look at line 2, right. The second page. That one, post advanced warning signs and compliance, seemed a little odd. That's the signage, that uniform signage, and I don't know how an individual gets the authority to post Department of Motor Vehicle or Department of Transportation signage. So that one's a little odd, but that aside, the permit and then Section 3. So all the new language, yes.
Well, not all the new language. You don't have a problem with basically saying that they don't impede traffic or create a traffic hazard. That's not a problem, is it?
Well, Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, parsing that out alone, not, but in the context that this picks out a particular group and provides that condition, it's a problem. Certainly passing something that gives access, that's neutral, and yes, you don't want them to create a traffic, but
yeah,
it's a subset criteria of the problem already in the bill.
Yeah, the last thing, Mr. Chair, last thing that we want is for the panhandlers that are today standing beside the freeway with their little signs and hoping for somebody to throw them a quarter. The last thing I want is for them to be walking down the middle of the lanes between traffic like they do, like the firefighters do during the Fill the Boot campaign.
Hmm. Yeah, Chair Metzger, Senator Starr. So if that's that information in terms of what they do, if they do that, that is a problem because you can't restrict, and it isn't just the panhandlers. It might be me asking for someone to join the ACLU to sign a petition for an initiative. You can't say who can fundraise or ask for money or engage in any kind of speech. It could be commercial speech. You know, buy my furniture at Joe Smith's Furniture down the block. And that does create a traffic hazard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrea, obviously you're sympathetic with the ultimate goal we're trying to achieve here. And so I understand that. So walk through me. Here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that people can continue doing what they want to do. They have the freedom to go out and do the fill the boot campaign. So how would you structure, or how would you restructure this bill to allow the firefighters to do what they want to do, and how would you change it? What specific language, rather than just oppose this? Because clearly they view that there's some impediment to them doing it. So how do we get there from here using your philosophy?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, I'm not sure I can sit here right now and tell you exactly, but the criteria you use, if you're going to provide exceptions to where people can be, so normally people can't be there. If you're going to say people can be there, then you need to make it for anyone, for any purpose. You certainly can, and you can't provide liability insurances and making access limited by restriction permits. You can't have an agency decide who can get the permit and who can't based on generic factors. It has to be first come, first serve. You know, if you're going to say it can be along the strip, then you can regulate it's along the strip. But that's a content neutral. You're not restricting ostensibly one group from another. But if you're talking about going in the streets or in the streets, I don't know how to design it in a way other than you have to make it allowed for everyone. So what's good for the one person has to be good for another. And
Senator George. Gary,
I'm a little bothered, too, by Section 3. I hadn't looked at it until you brought this issue up, and that is the Department of Transportation shall issue the permit. Well, if we have everyone, you know, if we're going to keep this open to everyone to do what they've been doing, we would have a fiscal monster coming from ODOT relative to the number of people they would have to issue permits to all the panhandlers that Senator Starr was talking about. So it really does look like it does strike a significant impediment to a person going ahead and doing what today they have free speech rights to do.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, correct, and I wouldn't want you to all think that if you just remove the permitting process and keep the rest of the language that it's still okay, because of the rest of the language still qualifies, again, who can do it and for what purpose they're doing it. But yeah, when any entity sets up a permitting process, it has to be run in a manner that generally first come, first serve, and neutral, and that the owners, there are not owners' restrictions on liability and other proof that they can be present and participate fully. So, I apologize, Senator George. I'm not familiar actually with how the street or the roads are used for this purposes, how you do it, but it sounds like there's a general safety issue going on here, and we're carving out an exception for folks who might be very well trained, who might be very sensitive to those issues, who are, you know, fire safety officers, but you can't provide that exception for people who are better able to navigate an area because of training than others.
Senator Johnson.
Is any amount of insurance requirement deemed onerous by you?
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, as long as there are waivers available, and I haven't had a chance because of the short time to investigate the schemes of where case law comes down both under the First Amendment and the Oregon Free Expression provision to tell you where the limitations are. I believe in most jurisdictions there are waivers and options so that people, you know, the protests around the war movement, as you know, in Portland over the years have been extremely large, taking over wide swaths of downtown Portland. They cost the city money, but the people do not need to pay for it, and they do not need to come up with extremely high insurance for these nonprofit organizations that don't have it. But what the criteria is, I don't have the in front of me, and so I can't tell you where the line is constitutionally and what cities and counties have done.
Yes.
I'm going to let it go.
Is it possible to get Mr. Livingston up back up here and get his response to this? Because
he'd like to, sure.
I mean, if you don't mind, because here's my issue. Okay. When Senator Devlin was in here a few minutes ago, he actually said on the record we've done everything except require a big red truck. And I guess my point is that I understand their perspective. I don't necessarily want to make it so it's. I mean, I want to make it as broad as possible with safety and concern, but at the same time, I don't want to narrow it down so it's just one group and we're doing a special interest bill. I think we ought to do everything we can to make sure that the firefighters can do what they want to do, but if there's a way to answer it, so go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, once again for the record, Bob Livingston representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. A couple of points I'll make. Certainly, I'll put the notion that I don't have the JD behind my name, but I can tell you that we've worked with the governor's office, the solicitor general, legislative council, and other people that do have the JD behind their name, and the reason that we did work with those folks is to address the constitutional issues. And I think where the confusion lies here is that if you look at the original bill, Senate Bill 1084, and then you have to look at the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments take out Section 3 on the issuance of a permit. And so as Senator Devlin noted, on the Dash 1 amendments, those are what we're supporting. But what we're talking about here is we need to be able, in order to do the Fill the Boot campaign, we need to be able to have an exception to the statute on the improper position upon or improperly proceeding along a highway. This is not going to stop somebody that wants to stand on the sidewalk and have them sign a petition or ask for bus fare. What we're asking for is that in order to get the exception so that you're not in violation of impeding traffic when you're out in the highway, here's the requirements that you meet. And as Senator Johnson alluded to, as long as a group meets those requirements, they're going to do that. They can do that. And that's why, in defense of her a little bit, you have to look at the Dash 1 amendments. Clearly, other states have went along the same lines. We've had people that are a lot smarter than me look at this language. I believe this passes constitutional muster. So I hope that is responsive to your question, Senator George, and as well as some of the points that you're bringing up, Senator Johnson.
Chair Metzger, I appreciate that. I do have the Dash 1s before me, and I did review them. They still require, however, that a pedestrian be soliciting contributions as part of a fundraising activity for an organization. And you still do have the $1 million liability, and you also have these signs that you're supposed to get from the Oregon Transportation Commission. So I know there's not a permit process anymore, but there's obviously you can't do it unless you get these signs from OTC. And so I don't believe, with all due respect, please do as the committee wishes. I don't want to be right, but I'm pretty confident on this one based on the case law. Chair Metzger, you'd mentioned a panhandling ordinance. I don't know if it was Medford or Roseburg.
Roseburg was the one.
A new one. I mean, there's been a number of new ones passed recently, and let me just say that many of them are susceptible, and we ACLU will be addressing those. And I want to make clear, because something that was said earlier, panhandling is a lawful protected speech activity. It is not a crime to ask someone for money, just like it isn't a crime to ask someone to sign a petition. It is a crime, though, to engage in drug trade, and I certainly wouldn't want to compare someone selling drugs on the street to someone asking for money or anything else as the same. They're not. And so if someone is soliciting money and hitting you, assaulting you, or otherwise engaged in criminal activity, that's the crime. The crime in and of itself isn't saying, hey, can you spare a dime? It's other activities that might raise it to a criminal, but panhandling, as it's used, is not a crime.
Yeah, that looks under.
I do. Just to put a finer point on this, based on what you said, it seems to be the level of hassle to go get the signs. That is some distinguishing factor for you that I don't understand. If the firefighters in an organized way go down and ask ODOT for the signs, that's fine, or get signs approved in some way. I would assume that it is not the issuance of the signs itself, but are you suggesting that because, let's use your panhandler example, it might be more difficult for panhandlers to approach an ODOT maintenance station and figure out what the sign should say, that creates a constructive discrimination?
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, and again, apologize, I have cold medicine hangover, so I am trying not to. I'll get to the signage in a second. Again, I want to emphasize that the major problem is that you're selecting out who can do it. Now,
no, we're not. If the sign is the issue and anybody can go down and get the sign, but it's easy for an organized group of firefighters who do this every year and raise lots of money for worthwhile causes versus a disorganized group who doesn't know how to deal with the bureaucracy very easily, you seem to be suggesting that that is a de facto discriminatory element. And I'm saying if anybody could go down and get the sign, but it's just easier for one group of people, where's the discrimination?
Chair Metzger, Senator Johnson, be patient with me. I want to answer your question, but if this legislation were not limited to people engaged in fundraising or organizational activity and simply said, if you want to use this area, here's the criteria, you need to get a sign and you need to do this, you might not have a problem if it's easily accessible to everyone and it's not a significant barrier. I'm not about to advise you on that. If it said any person can be in this place as long as they obtain this and do that, and fill out this form. And then you need to look at whether those particular things, including getting a sign from ODOT, you know, what's the, if there's a criteria or not. So if anyone could do it, and then you start having these conditions that are neutral on their face, you'd have to see how it's applied, and you'd have to see how onerous they are. I don't know how onerous it would be to get that sign. I'm not, or that signage. I'm simply not familiar with that. So I'm not objecting simply to the sign, and that's why I want to make sure I'm clear, which I may not be when I'm answering your question, that my concern isn't the sign alone, it's a factor.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I'm not sure the horse is dead, so I want to take one more pass at it. What if the firefighters in holding the boot out in the street were educating about the existence of muscular dystrophy camp or muscular dystrophy services through Shriners or OHSU? Their principal function was that of education. Would ACLU raise the same objections?
Chair Metzger or Senator Johnson, we certainly would. Again, it could be commercial speech saying buy furniture. It could be political speech. It could be employment speech. Speech is all the same. So that's where you get the content-based restriction when we say it's facially invalid because it's a content-based. The content I'm talking about is You're all engaged in the same action of words coming out of your mouth or holding a sign, but you're looking at what they're saying and what they're talking about, and that's where you can't do it. So educational, good reasons, bad reasons, good people, bad people, all the same.
Mr. Chairman,
real quickly, if I could.
Andrea, if we're talking about, are you differentiating between organization versus individual, or are you differentiating between fundraising activities being a defined issue? Like if we took out the term fundraising and just said organizational activities and then I could go through this, would you still find it objectionable? So you need to remove, but we need to remove, under your view, we need to remove both that has to do with an organization and that has to do with fundraising activities. The rest of the criteria that you don't care about. Because then it would be access would be to everybody, individuals, organizations, commercial, non-commercial, but they'd all have to go through the same permitting process. You wouldn't have an objection to that. But because it says organization and fundraising, that's where you have your objection?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, yes. At the front end, our objection is qualifying it in any manner other than a person. Once you go beyond a person and you qualify what they're part of or what they're speaking about, you have a problem. Now, if you just said a person doing the following, then again, you'd have to look at whether the restrictions or the obligations that they have to satisfy to be there are onerous, are basically prior restraint because they're so restrictive to be able to get. Does that answer your
question? I think what I'm going to do right now, because this could go on, I find this stuff fascinating. I really do. I do. I mean, I study this stuff a lot, and I understand some points that are here that are probably accurate. But we're also trying to get the solution here. So I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to dismiss our two panelists at the moment. Cindy Robert, you asked to testify. I'm going to step out just
for
a second.
Thank you, Members
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert and I represent the city of Medford. We actually are one of the cities that recently adopted an ordinance having to do with this issue. In November 2007, Medford adopted an ordinance that talked about definitions of solicitation and when you could not solicit. Mostly it was after you asked not to. You couldn't touch a person. Sounds very much like Las Vegas, but there were some of those parameters. The other parameter was location, where you could not solicit location-wise, and one of those was that at any intersection controlled by an electronic traffic control device. I appreciate the fact that the firefighters want to raise money, and I appreciate the fact that ACLU has questions about them doing it versus other people, and the fact that the amendments do set forth different things that you can do in order to get a permit in order to do this or get a bond so that you can do this. That's great, but it still comes down to a basic problem for the city of Medford and a problem that I think should be a problem for all of you, and that's that some local governments have already made ordinances, rules, decisions based on what what its people wanted on this very issue. And in the city of Medford, it wasn't just because of panhandlers. It was also a safety issue. Our emergency vehicles having to respond to people who are getting hit in the intersection. There are a lot of different things here that go into why the city of Medford adopted an ordinance. And no matter what decision all of you and all of you come to on this, is there some way that we can make it so that my citizens in Medford who already made a decision on this aren't overridden by what's done next?
Senator George and then Senator Johnson.
Well, I'm concerned because we still have this sign in compliance with ORS 810-200. And what I know about what these signs cost, okay, because I've actually tried to buy some to warn about something going on relative to agriculture practice, and I find that they're very expensive, and I think it really could be a point of saying, well, that's discriminatory because it's almost impossible for any person to be able to afford more than one. And then are you displaying the sign in accordance with ODOT's rules? Do you have anything that requires any signage when you do permit?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, no, we do not. We don't have any signage. We don't have any bond requirements. We don't have permit requirements. What we do have are simple five areas in our city that you cannot solicit. Five areas. And one of those happens to be a traffic intersection that's an electronic signaled section.
Okay, Senator Johnson.
I'm really struggling with this. We're talking about firefighters who, in the day-to-day discharge of their duties, frequently stand in intersections where other people have made serious mistakes, and the firefighters are there to sort out the mess.
Mm-hmm.
I also can't help but listen to this last 15 minutes of debate and see that little kid sitting in the wheelchair that just left here, with firefighters raising $300 million over time to help him and similarly situated kids step out of those wheelchairs. And I would like us to refocus the debate on how do we get to yes. How do we figure out how to let these firefighters who take their own volunteer time to go do this, how do we get to yes? Do you have a yes solution?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, first of all, one of my goals is not only to find a yes to every issue, not just a no, and this is new to me today, but I would find one for you by the end of the day. One of my other goals is to make sure that nobody ends up in a wheelchair like that child because of the unsafe conditions. And although the firefighters are perfectly capable of weaving through traffic, they're perfectly capable of taking care of themselves, there are some really bad drivers out there that they have no control over. Those are what my concerns are. If the city of Medford can sit down and either get... find some way that we open up other areas where the firefighters can solicit money, or we open up a system where we make sure that they're not in these five simple areas that we've put forward, we'd be happy to do that. Again, we are not trying to in any way stop this great fundraising activity. We're trying to make sure that local decisions can be kept and held up for our people.
Mr. Chair. Then set aside the issues raised by the ACLU. We'll get back to those in a minute. How about the city of Medford set aside out of your ordinances one day a year when the firefighters would be there?
Senator Metzger, Senator Johnson, first of all, as to the ACLU issues, I didn't understand any of them. But as to your suggestion of one day, excellent. Those are the kind of yes opportunities I would love to find. And if we could set aside one day, if that's something that works with the legal aspects of our ordinance, which I don't see, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see a reason why that wouldn't work. And I actually think that's a fabulous idea. It makes it so no one has to go get a permit, but it allows this to happen. Would we run afoul of making it happen on one day and then having the whole world there on that one day? I'm not sure, but those are the kind of suggestions I'd be happy to sit down and try to find if this committee so desires, or if you just want me to go away, lick my wounds, and let the state override what my people want.
That's a possibility.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Roberts? Do you still want Mr. Tindall to come forward?
I wouldn't, if we could.
Sure, you Mr. Tindall? Yeah, he's sitting in the back of the room. He's got nothing else to do.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I just reviewed what ORS 810-200 is, and it basically just gives the commission the authority to create rules about traffic signs. So,
but wouldn't this say that there would have to be a sign that they did take that action on?
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Doug Tindall, Deputy Director, Department of Transportation. The action that the commission took to comply with 810-200 or 810-220, I can't remember which one it is, it adopts what's called the manual and uniform traffic control devices. The type of signage that is required for this type of event is probably two, maybe three signs, ground mount signs, Not Senator George, not the variable message signs, just the regular ground mount signs. You drive down here to American Standard and pick them up, and they're not. They're probably under $100 each, and they're reusable, you know, year after year. So that's what that signing requirement means. It's a little bit in the way it's worded. It seems a little bit mysterious, but actually, it's pretty simple.
Okay. Doug, that may be fine for the firefighters who are doing this fundraiser, but in fact, relative to ACLU's contention, that would require everybody to go down. And why I price the signs, and I think they're right around $65, but then you've got to build the support for it. You have to have, do the rules include how it must be supported? Because now you're probably $150, so this times two is $300. I would consider that to be an impediment if I was going to go into court and argue against you. I'd say, hey, wait a minute, average person, particularly a panhandler, can't afford a $300.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, the signs in this type of application are usually what are called ground mounted, which means you just put on a little tripod thingy. Now you don't have to post mount these signs, so the cost is not that great. In terms of the constitutional issue, I'm not a lawyer. I know that the department worked with the governor's office and with DOJ, and their conclusion was different than the conclusion you heard before, and that in fact these restrictions would meet the constitutional test.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tindall. Okay, what I'm going to do, and this is goes back to our original discussion about if we have some issues, we have time to do it. I think it's really important, and I think it's clear where the committee is that. You know, we want to be able to get this thing done so the firefighters can do this. Not a question. I do have a concern, having dealt with Article 1, Section 8, and, you know, my own personal belief, it's much too broad. I can't believe our founders really intended some of the things the courts rule. But I do recognize they have ruled that way. And having dealt with the panhandling issue and some of the interpretations of it, the one thing I don't want to do is move forward and have those questions in doubt and lose it, you know, before we can hear that, because I want it to move forward. So we've got questions that we don't have the people to answer. We have heard that Legislative Council, Ted Ruttlinger is our constitutional expert, and the AG has worked on this and said it's okay. I think before we go to the floor and have this long debate, it'd be nice for the committee to have those assurances that they can defend this. Or if we have to make a tweak, we tweak it and get it out Thursday. So if that's okay with you folks, I'm going to ask Patrick to have those who worked on this bill, the JDs after their name, including Mr. Ruttlinger, come and discuss why they feel that this is okay so that our colleagues can have comfort in doing what we want to do, which is to make sure firefighters can do this, and not put them in an issue where we are violating the Constitution or have any questions that we're violating the Constitution. Is that okay? We can move this in on Thursday. Yes, Senator Monroe.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a wise choice. I was going to suggest something similar. Just because one lawyer that represents one particular point of view says something is unconstitutional doesn't make it so. It's been my experience that you get two lawyers or three lawyers in a room and you get a half a dozen different different options on what the Constitution says or means. So it is important that we get some certified smart people with JD after their name that have worked with this issue and this portion of the Constitution to come in and tell us whether or not this is appropriate, and then we have to make a choice of which lawyer we believe.
Well, we can do that. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate this because I hadn't even thought about those things. I looked at them. It kind of popped up in my mind as it might be a problem, but I think it's an issue we need to resolve.
Yes.
Because after looking at it now, I have more hesitancy than I ever thought I would see.
Yeah, I think we need to. I know that in working on the panhandling issue and the rather detailed stuff I received from Legislative Council and discussions on that, with Article 1, Section 8, the issue is dealing with speech, and that if you want to control something, it's clear you've got to control conduct, not speech. So apparently these people have worked on this and put that side to side. The last thing I think we want is our firefighters to have to find out that we think we solved a problem, and all of a sudden now we've created something that prevents them from doing it, and making sure that our members feel comfortable about it. So with that, what we will do, Mr. Livingston and others, this will be back on Thursday for work session, but I'm going to ask our attorneys to answer the questions that we can't answer, who put this together and obviously feel comfortable about it. So, but I think we need to have that comfort so that we can relay that to our colleagues on the floor. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1084. We will post this for Thursday at 1 o'clock. And members, so what we have going forward at 6 o'clock, we will reconvene to do, I can't remember the number.
1080.
I just remembered. Senate Bill 1080, which is a driver license bill, so that you can plan your evening. We are going from 6 to 8 o'clock. We will be finished by 8 o'clock so we can all see how California does and all the things that everybody's interested in tonight. And then on tomorrow, we meet tomorrow?
We do not meet tomorrow. We meet
Thursday. We do not meet tomorrow. So then on, that's right, Thursday, Friday. Thursday then we will...
Informational meeting.
And have an informational meeting, and then we will have informational meetings next week as well. Okay, with that, we are adjourned.